three, two, one. Happy New Year from our friends over at Manscaped. The ball has officially dropped, but that doesn't mean you have to drop the ball on your balls in 2023. Whether you had a New Year's kiss or not, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming have you covered for your much-needed resolution of bringing sexy back. So join the 7 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with our exclusive offer. Go to manscaped.com and use the promo code Sullivan20 for 20% off plus free shipping. Let us have a toast for a new year, new you, and a new you with no pubes. To complete the set, Manscaped threw in the Shed travel bag and anti-chafing boxers as free gifts to give to you to keep all your goodies stored nice and comfortably to go along with the Performance Package 4.0. Inside that Performance Package 4.0, you'll find the signature Lawnmower 4.0. The advanced skin-safe technology reduces cuts and nicks on your delicate parts. It also comes equipped with a 4000K LED spotlight that will shine a light to the promised land 2023 looks to be. Cheers to new balls in 2023. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code Sullivan20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use that promo code Sullivan20. Time to feel sexy and free this 2023 with Manscaped. Welcome to Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. I'm your host, JP John Paz. With me, of course, the star of the show, the former WCW and ECW World Tag Team Champion. He is, of course, one of the greatest minds and bookers ever in the history of the business, the Games Master, the Taskmaster, the devil himself, Mr. Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm excellent, JP. How are you doing, my man?
I'm doing good. It's absolutely freezing, which is odd for the month that it is, but weird weather here in New Jersey lately. Don't know why, but it's terrible.
Yeah. Did you get snow?
A little bit. Yep.
My brother lives in New Hampshire, lost power, and they were snowed in. Yeah.
Yeah. Guy I work with works in New Hampshire. He said he literally couldn't get out to go to work. He was stuck inside, home.
Yeah.
So I wanted to mention to you GNW, Greater North Wrestling, in Canada, May 6th. You're going to be there. You're going to be managing James Storm. How did this come about?
The promoter called me. I was supposed to go there when the COVID was hitting, and it's a make update, so I'm really looking forward to it.
You like your time up there in Canada?
Well, I like to go up. It's very nice, and it's great to travel, baby. It's great to travel.
I feel like you always create a buzz when you're up there in Canada. Something always goes crazy up there.
Yeah. It's always interesting.
GNW, Greater North Wrestling, like I said, May 6th up there. When you go up to Canada and you're there, are you in full devil mode? Are you, you got your booker hat on? You got your manager hat on? You got your devil hat on?
Manager hat, yeah. Looking forward to it.
How'd you get associated with James Storm?
I've known James from the Texas, the Southwest Fury.
Oh, right. Okay. Oh, I forgot he was a part of that. Yeah. That
Yeah.
was pretty, that organization was pretty hot for a time there.
Was very hot. Very hot. They were doing 1,200 people. Then there was a change in management. You know.
Yeah, it was like hot during, almost during when everybody else wasn't. Like it was during COVID. They were kicking
Exactly.
ass.
Exactly.
Well, now you and James get to reunite in Canada on the 6th for GNW. That should be a good one. Always something going on, like I said, with you in Canada and GNW. Something is always buzzworthy coming off those shows.
Looking forward to it.
So, as far as the topic at hand today, what we want to talk about, we wanted to talk about the man that just passed away, absolute legend in the business, Mr. Jerry Jarrett, owner, promoter, booker. I mean, he's done it all. He's seen it all. He, of course, was a wrestler himself. His son, Jeff, became a very famous wrestler. When did you first meet Mr. Jerry Jarrett?
I first met Jerry probably in 1972 when he came to Florida. I had just come in. And it might have been later, it might have been 73, but I think it was 72 when he came in to wrestle. And he was going to wrestle for a couple of weeks in Florida.
What did you think about him when you first met him?
I mean, casual meetings, you know, at the time, you know, didn't ride with them, saw him in the dressing room. But he was only in for a couple of weeks. And then later on, when I went, and no, I gotta rephrase that. I had met him in Nashville in 71, and
Yes.
he was just working in the office at the time. And after that, I met him when he was wrestling in Florida. Came up for a couple of weeks, yeah.
I don't know if you're going to remember this or not, but I was looking it up before we did this, and there was an NWA World Tag Team Championship match from NWA Mid-America Mid-South Coliseum in Memphis on 10/18/1971. You and Jerry teamed together and lost to the guys known as the Interns. I don't know if you remember that or not.
I do remember now that you mentioned that. Yeah, it was one. He was first starting. Yeah.
That's crazy. Like to go all the way back and it was like thinking like, you know, when did I meet him? Where did I go? And then it's like, holy crap, you guys actually, because I didn't realize it until I looked it up, but you guys actually were a team or teamed together, albeit briefly, and end up being Mid-America.
Right. I think it was one shot.
Man, crazy just to think and to look back. I know at those days and who was running things. So was that Nick Gulas era? Was that Nick Gulas and Roy Welsh era? Who was running NWA Mid-America at that point?
That was Nick and Roy together. They've been together since 48 or 45. Yeah.
What did you think about working for Gulas?
You know, everybody said how bad a payoff guy he was. He treated me very well, very well. I got paid. So, I mean, the trips were long, but other than that, it was pretty, it drew pretty well too. It really drew well.
Yeah, that show that you guys were on together, I mean, obviously you guys weren't like a main part of the card. You're early on in the card, but still, I mean, you're selling 10,000 people at the Mid-South Coliseum there in Memphis. So, I mean, that's a pretty good house.
Yes, it is.
What did you think of Gulas and Jerry Jarrett's relationship? Because obviously he leaves that territory, and was it contentious? Did they not get along? Like you said, was he maybe he didn't pay Jerry fairly? Like, what did you think about Jerry wanting to leave Gulas and leave that area and basically start CWA and start his own promotion?
Here's what happened. That's the first time the NWA went ever against an NWA member. When Jerry broke away from Nick, Nick was the NWA member. The NWA sent talent into Memphis. Me and Mike wrestled as World Tag Team Champions up there. The Rock and Roll were there. Holly Race was the champion. I think Dusty was on the card. The Briscoes were on the card. I mean, they loaded that card up. And that had never been done before where they worked, that I know of, ran against an NWA member and backed the, as they called it, opposition.
Why did they do that? What happened? I mean, was it something more underlining? Like, what was going on there?
Yeah, they saw that Nick and Roy were in the past and that Jerry was the future.
Did you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they had pissed guys off, Nick and Roy, and probably broken deals with other promoters.
When you look at it, obviously, you know, Jerry is a wrestler, but he's also got that promoter hat on. Like, did you look at him and say, I don't know if he's going to be, you know, a long-term full-time wrestler. He's got other aspirations. Or that when you looked at him, did you think like, oh man, this guy's like, he could be the boss rather than one of the talents?
I knew that he was going to be the boss at some point.
What kind of led you to that? Or what did you think about his personality that made you think that?
He was business, complete business. But he understood the wrestling business. Think about this. When Vince might have gone to the can during the steroid scandal, he was going to give Jerry that position to run the company.
Yep.
You don't do that if you're not sure about a guy.
Why do you think that Vince picked Jerry? If we're just staying on that topic, why do you think he picked Jerry?
Because Jerry was so smart. And he could see the big picture.
But why Jerry over someone else? You know what I mean? Like, why not somebody in-house?
Because nobody was smart. He didn't have anybody at that time or he didn't think was smart as Jerry, or had the connections.
Do you think that when you look at it and, you know, some other guys from WWF, you know, whoever it would be, JJ, Bruce, whoever's there at the time, you think there was some jealousy there that, you know, you're picking Jerry, he doesn't even work here and he's going to take over this, you know, this huge company?
That wasn't JJ's position to run the company. That wasn't Bruce's either, right?
Right.
Jared had ran a successful, very successful company for quite a long time.
Did you think when like that was going on, did you think Vince was really going to jail?
I wasn't sure. I knew they spent a lot of money. And usually, you know, the government wins on these type of things.
Yeah. I mean, and that was a huge case. And obviously, you know, he had that, remember the neck brace? He wore the neck brace, the cord and everything. So he was nervous. He definitely, he was up to anything to try to get out of there. But hey, he's got Jerry McDivitt, the greatest lawyer of all time on his side. So he was able to, you know, beat the government.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a hard thing to do.
A lot of trust between Vince and Jerry, if you look at it, and a lot of respect that, hey, you know, I may lose my company, but I'm going to bring in this outsider who may be the only guy that can kind of fill my shoes in the CEO role and kind of run things. And he was really the only successful territory guy left. Everyone else had failed and moved on and everything else. I mean, Jerry still had a territory. He was still kind of a feeder, so to speak, for Vince. So he was, you know, the last of the Mohicans.
Yeah, he was the last territory, right?
So looking at that, it's almost like, wow, imagine what would have happened. Do you think WWF goes up, goes down, maintains? Or what do you think if Jerry's there instead of Vince?
I think Jerry could have kept it going. But there would have been things we probably never would have saw this. I don't think we would have saw Austin get as big as he did. Because there would have been no Austin McMahon.
Yeah, that's true. Very true. It would have been, wow, what an interesting time if he had gone to jail and, you know, they bring in, quote unquote, an outsider guy and they bring him in and he's running WWF. I mean, oof, crazy. With all the politics and everything else going on behind the scenes, it would have been crazy to see.
Yeah, but we probably would have seen an Austin Lala feud.
Ooh, that would have been nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
When you look at CWA, when he starts CWA, he's still wrestling a little bit, but obviously, you know, he takes it back. When they formed and then they start, what did you think? Like, did you think this is going to be successful? What did you think of CWA with Jerry Jarrett and Jerry Lawler?
When they were, I knew they could exist, but they couldn't compete. You know, they're down to very small region, you know, Memphis and Dallas, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can't compete against an international powerhouse.
When you look at it, do you like his background in the business, meaning that his mother, Christine Jarrett, a.k.a. Teeny, she was in the business. She worked for Gulish. She worked for Welsh. She actually kind of you know, branched off and basically was promoting her own shows, really a part of the territory, but really had her own show and her own programs that she was running a part of the territory. Do you think that was really key for Jerry and, you know, helping his maturation process in the business?
I'm sure it helped. It might not have been key, but it certainly helped him. And she was well respected in the wrestling business.
What do you think about Teeny?
I thought she was a nice lady.
Did you know her very well or not really?
Yeah, I used to see her up in Louisville and Lexington. I worked them most every week, so I would see her up there. She was very nice.
He really kind of learns the business kind of from her, really, from the going to those shows, because, you know, he'll be selling programs, he'll become a referee, you know, as he starts getting older and older, he becomes more of a fixture, a part of the business, and starts learning. Do you think that's kind of key for a guy to really have long-term success, is to kind of learn the business from the ground up?
Yeah, I think so. It's important. So they gave him a great background.
Think that helped him in the long run? Like you're saying, he was always business-minded, maybe because he saw the behind the scenes when he was so young. He's kind of always had that promoter hat on.
Yeah, I think so. You know, he had always done things besides wrestle, learned the inside of the business, and became a businessman.
Whenever we think of Jerry, we kind of always think of Tojo Yamamoto as well. Did you know Tojo very well? Did you wrestle him, or are you familiar with Tojo?
Yes, I didn't wrestle him because he was a babyface when I got there, and I was a babyface. He taught Jerry a lot.
They obviously were a good tag team for a while. I mean, they were Mid-America tag team champions, Southern tag team champions. I mean, they won a bunch of belts together and kind of go hand in hand a bit. Was Tojo a big part of the behind the scenes or not as much?
Not behind the scenes, but he was a confidant of Jerry's.
Seemed like, obviously, you know, they're the inaugural tag team champs for CWA together. It just seems like everybody always kind of puts those two together. Not necessarily as a behind-the-scenes team like Jerry and Jerry Lawler, but in front of the cameras, I feel like Tojo and Jerry Jarrett always kind of go hand-in-hand. A lot of people know them very well.
Yeah. They're part of the Nashville office and, you know, the big stars that Nashville had at the time.
What do you think was the key? I know we're saying it's kind of a niche, but it was a successful territory. So many guys come in and out. What do you think it was about Jerry that he was so good at spotting talent and kind of bringing guys in and developing a lot of good talent?
It wasn't just that he brought guys in. They would take anybody just about because their territory was so large. I mean, they were in Tennessee, Alabama, Mississippi, Arkansas, part of Illinois, part of West Virginia, they actually had Jimmy Golden, his dad had a territory within the territory. He had Anniston, Alabama was a territory. So, I mean, they had different ends. John Kazana had another territory within the territory, East Tennessee. So, I mean, it reached everywhere. I mean, they had, at one time, I bet you they had 50 or 60 wrestlers in the territory. They had about 6 to 7 towns a night running.
man, if you just look back at some of those guys, I know some of them are very young, but Hogan, Ventura, Savage, obviously Lawler, Bam Bam Bigelow, Tommy Rich, Austin Idol. I mean, there's so many awesome guys that came from that Memphis area, and, you know, obviously blossomed other places. But, man, what a roster they were able to put forth through all the years.
Yeah, they did it well, too.
When you look at CWA, obviously, you think of Jarrett, but you think of Lawler as well. With the success of Jerry Jarrett, would it have happened without Jerry Lawler?
Oh, Jerry was over like gangbusters. And he could turn heel or babyface. It didn't matter the people. They paid to see Jerry Lawler. An amazing run he had. In one little place, amazing.
You think that Jerry Jarrett is responsible for Jerry Lawler, but do you think he's as successful as he is without Lawler? It doesn't seem like, you know what I mean, like he's the king.
I don't think they both would have been successful without each other.
It's almost like a miniature version of Hogan and Vince, you know what I mean? They kind of need each other.
Right, absolutely.
So CWA, did you work there often? I know you did, but did you work in the Memphis territory a lot?
I went back later and worked with Lawler from Atlanta when I was a heel. So I was there quite a bit, yeah. For a couple of, probably 3 months straight.
Do you remember who, like, you feuded with mainly? Like, was it Stevie Kern? Was it Jerry himself? Do you remember who you wrestled
Jerry,
with?
Jerry himself, Steve Kern, Dundee. That me and Honky were tag team partners against Dundee and Lawler. Yeah.
What did you think about the territory? Because so many people were saying, like, when you look at Memphis, they're known as being, like, wild, crazy. You know what I mean? Like, you never know what's going to happen. Almost like ECW before ECW, but, you know, to a much lesser scale. But everyone always says, like, what a wacky territory, wacky gimmicks, crazy, you know, crazy times in Memphis. What's your overall thought of the CWA Memphis territory when you were there?
It was something for everybody, but it was it was geared to Southern mentality. If you had a guy with a New York accent, he would probably draw money. Do you know what I mean? Yep. They made us against them. And blonde wrestlers drew money. But they knew their territory, and that's what you need to know. They knew how to run their territory because they knew the heartbeat of it.
Wayne Ferris, a good partner of yours then, obviously pre-Honky Tonk Man. What did you think about Honky?
Enjoyed him. A great guy. I loved him.
When that territory, you know, is obviously going on, there's so many other guys coming in and out. Eventually, you know, they'll create the Kamala gimmick. I mean, they'll do some off-the-wall stuff. Did you sometimes, like, laugh at some of the stuff? Like, oh, yeah. Come on, like, some of this stuff is crazy. Not, I mean, Kamala's an awesome gimmick, but some of the other stuff they came up with is pretty silly over the years.
Yeah. Some of the style I wasn't big on either because I came from a wrestling territory, but I forgot to realize this is how the people were educated.
What style? You mean like hardcore style and weapons and stuff?
No, they did some cartoon stuff that I wasn't big on.
Did you like the brawling style of Memphis?
Yeah, I did.
Would you look at Jerry and what he's able to do? He makes a pretty good relationship with Bill Watts through the years, kind of a bit of a talent exchange. Do you think that's needed for the territories, like to kind of keep him going and keep him thriving? Because, you know, you have a guy come in, pop the territory, he can leave. It keeps guys fresh, right?
Yeah. And you got to realize there wasn't a guy seen on national TV for, I would say that the national TV went off for at least 12, 14 years, right? So if you saw a guy in California, you didn't see him from Chicago that went all over the United States, you know what I mean? So he was fresh everywhere he went.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. because when you look at Mid-South, their really infusion came when Dundee becomes the booker over there. Obviously, part of the talent exchange, Jerry gives him Dundee, but he also gives him, you know, the Midnights, the Rock and Roll Express. It's like that infusion of talent from Jerry Jarrett, his thought process, really, and obviously Watts takes them and brings them in. That's what kind of helped Mid-South and kind of put them in a hot period, really a very hot period for them. Dundee is Booker and the small guys from Memphis dominating.
Yeah, yeah.
Jerry, pretty damn savvy, right? Pretty smart business guy. Him and Watts get along? It just seems like two completely different personalities if you look at it.
Yeah, they got along very well, obviously. You know, you pointed out they traded talent, and that was Watts' biggest run, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, and it was probably Jerry's big run, too.
I'm guessing you probably got along better with Jerry Jarrett than Watts.
Me?
Yeah.
I got along with Bill, but he wanted me to go in Sturzer, but I wouldn't do it.
Why not? Yeah.
I didn't want to drive 3,500 miles a week.
Yeah, torturous. That territory was huge, and the drives were long. Yeah, definitely a torturous territory. A lot of guys complain about that, yeah.
And there was no interstate, you know? You were in back roads. Nah, that wasn't for me.
Jerry brings in Andy Kaufman, obviously, in 1982. That was a huge thing, huge story. It's awesome going back and watching that stuff. They're still doing documentaries on it. Vice TV still talking about it. Do you think that was kind of the not the high point, but that was something that everybody was talking about? I mean, they're on David Letterman. Was that the high point, though, really, for him as a booker and a promoter, like Andy Kaufman, Jerry Lawler, and that feud?
I'll tell you a story. Kaufman went to Vince Sr. first. Vince Sr. turned him down. Then he ended up in Atlanta. I was there when he came to the Omni and talked to Jim Barnett. Jim didn't want anything to do with him. Then when he went to Memphis, they were smart enough to see they could make a lot of money. Yeah, it was a high point. They do a movie in the movie about Jim Carrey. It's the high point of the movie, right?
Yeah, Man on the Moon. Yeah.
Yeah, high point of David Letterman's career.
He mentioned it on his last show that Andy was one of his favorite guests. And that was one of his favorite moments, you know, the slap heard around the world. It's just crazy to think that Vince Sr. didn't want a part of that. You know what I mean? Like that he turned that down. It just looks foolish looking back. Vince Jr. would have done it.
Here's what happened. Did you ever know the famous book Requiem for a Heavyweight?
No. Mm-mm.
It's basically based on Primo Carnera. You know who Primo Carnera was?
Yep.
You know, the heavyweight champion, boxing heavyweight champion of the world, where his fight set up. He was about 6'9". Well, after boxing, he got into wrestling. And Requiem for a Heavyweight is basically his story, but they used different names. They showed wrestlers in the dressing room, and this movie was made about 1960. They showed wrestlers dressing room, Haystacks Calhoun, Jerry Graham, I think Chief Big Heart, a couple of other guys. And the wrestling promoters went crazy because of that. I got a chance to be in me and Ivan Koloff one time, and her name was Julia Taylor, actually called me. She had gone to the Omni one night, and I was working with Ivan, and our pictures were on the cover, and she called me and said, I'd like to get you guys in a part of this movie. I went to Barnett, and he said, absolutely not. We don't want wrestlers in any movies. So Jerry was smart enough to see how this would open up. That's why I said about Jerry being such a smart guy. He saw the future. And Lawler did too.
Yeah, you need some of that celebrity dust. You know, you need some of that rub. It definitely helps in the mainstream and gets you those casual fans that you need.
Yeah. Yeah.
With him, meaning Jerry, and Vern Gagne, supposedly there had been talks of him buying the AWA or maybe merging them together. I know that they would all kind of work together and do some shows together. Did Vern just not want to play ball, not want to be a part? Like, what was the issue with Vern really not want to be, you know, part of the merger? And really, you know, even though they're doing shows together, Jerry really merges with World Class instead, with Fritz.
I don't have an idea there. I'm just assuming Vince wanted to keep his own ball game. But for Fritz, a lot of the boys had had tragedies. Fritz was getting tired, you know what I mean?
So that it was easier to deal with for Fritz because of all the tragedies that was going on in World Class with his sons, Gino, and Lance Von Erich leaves. He's not really Von Erich. I mean, there were so many things that happened in World Class. It's nuts.
Yeah, it was crazy.
What do you think about the USWA? The USWA gets put together, obviously, which is still Jerry Jarrett and Jerry Lawler, but basically that's the CWA plus World Class. They create United States Wrestling Association. Did you think that had legs to it? Did you think that anything to it? Because the Texas-Tennessee thing, or no?
No.
The way that they really kind of survive, though, is really a talent exchange with the WWF, really like 92-ish and going forward. They kind of become like a feeder organization. Do you think that was him just like, I got to survive, we should team up with WWF and I'll be a feeder for him?
Sure. Of course. He saw the writing on the wall.
Do you think that that's almost saying, not giving up, but that's almost saying like, man, I got to move on from the business? Kind of thing?
Well, yeah, probably, because all the other people had fallen. And he was going to come in anyway against them. And any talent that he was developing was going to go up there, right?
Yep.
Nothing he could do.
That was pretty smart, though. You know, I thought that was really smart of him to team up and obviously, you know, work with Vince, and rather than compete, you're the last remaining territory, you're the last survivor, might as well become a feeder and you know, feed the beast.
Right, and you can't stop progress.
So looking at it, he does get out of the business, basically, in 97. He kind of just sells to Jerry Lawler and kind of gets out of wrestling. You think he was just done? You know what I mean? Like, was he just done with wrestling? Because, I mean, he was successful in many other ventures, construction and a lot of other ventures that he was pretty pretty financially secure with.
Yeah, I'm sure he's just done. I mean, he had his run. There was nothing left. There was no territories. He became a feeder system and wanted to go, you know, change his tune.
And we mentioned earlier, obviously, to really start the show, we were talking about how he was going to replace Vince because of the respect everybody had, and he was the only successful promoter. Vince thought Jerry would be the perfect replacement. That was obviously during the 93-94 time period, a little bit before he decides to exit the business. But also during that point, interesting to note that Vince kept him on the payroll as a consultant. I don't know how much he consulted with him or didn't consult, but that's pretty interesting, right? I mean, he kind of kept him on the payroll. He must have liked the guy. You know what I mean? Like, that's
appreciated what Jerry was going to do for him. That's only good business.
Do you think that that's like a different side of Vince? Because to me, everyone's like, oh, he's such a, you know, cutthroat. He's an asshole. This and that. Like, that's kind of shows a different side, that he's paying this guy, doesn't even work for him anymore. Because, hey, thank you, basically. Hey, thank you. I'm going to keep paying you.
Yeah, I think Vince has been probably a pretty loyal guy to a lot of people.
Did you also know during the same time, and Jerry, and I interviewed Jerry a few times before, and we talked about this, he asked for Vince's blessing, and Vince kept paying him. So during this period, WCW, Bischoff calls him, and he becomes a consultant for WCW. So he's like a consultant for both at the same time and getting paid by both, and Vince said he didn't care. Like, did you know that? Like, that's kind of crazy.
I didn't really know that, but I can understand Vince's point of view.
Man, and obviously, I don't know how much Eric used him or didn't use him, but obviously he respected the knowledge that he had too, and kind of wanted to put him on board and see if he can, you know, shoot some things by him and get some ideas and some consulting from Jerry too.
Yeah, smart.
You ever heard of that before? Like a consultant for the two big companies? Have you ever heard of like something like that happening?
That before.
It's got to be somewhat like you don't want them telling Jerry one thing and Jerry going to another. I mean, he didn't and wouldn't, but you know what I mean? Depending on the person, you don't want him giving information from one company to another.
They're going to sign a non-disclosure, and if, especially in big business, if you mess up there, you can get your ass sued.
Then, of course, 2002 rolls around a few years later, and he starts NWA TNA with his son, Jeff, who obviously a legend in the business in his own right. TNA, obviously, it wasn't as successful, to put it mildly, wasn't a successful company for the most part. I guess people would have differing opinions, but it wasn't a competitor to the WWF, basically, is what I'm saying. Not a competitor to WWE. What did you think about NWA TNA?
The premise was okay, but I think I'm with you. I just was going to be very hard to catch Vince at this time.
With TNA, he basically is there for a little bit, and then October of 2002, and really they began in June, but he sold 72% of the controlling interest to Panda Energy, and that's when the Carters come in because they really needed money to keep this thing funded. So he's kind of moved out of power, so to speak, a little bit. Jeff is obviously still in power, but it's really Dixie's show kind of going forward, and it kind of pushing him off to the side. Then in 2005, he finally leaves. Really has a dispute over the direction of the company and leaves. Do you know anything? Do you have any inner workings of what happened there with Jerry and Jeff and like the breakdown and him leaving TNA, the company he started?
No, I have no idea. I really don't. What have you heard?
That he wanted to do certain things and go in a different direction, and they were thinking like sports entertainment, and obviously, with Russo booking, they kind of had a different philosophy or a different thought, and he wanted to go in one direction, they kind of wanted to go another, and then him and Jeff had a lot of creative differences, a lot of personal differences, and that kind of created a friction between Jerry and Jeff for years.
I could see that.
Then on top of that, a guy named Oleg Proteus, who everybody probably knows as Vladimir Kozlov, Jerry was basically his manager, in real life, and it was kind of, where should he go? TNA didn't want him for whatever reason, so Jerry says to Vince McMahon, hey, you want Vladimir Kozlov? Vince takes a look at this guy. He's a monster of a man. He's a Sambo champion, and Vince wants him and brings him in, and that also created a problem because, hey, Jerry, you used to work for TNA, and now you're working hand-in-hand with Vince, giving him talent. I don't know if you were aware of that situation at all either, but Vladimir Kozlov, with Jerry Jarrett's guidance, gets signed to WWF in 2005.
No, I was not aware of that.
So that created a bit of friction as well. Like, hey, what the hell? You're but apparently Jeff didn't think he'd work in TNA or didn't want him, so Jerry just moved him to WWF, and Vince loved him and wanted him there.
Well, now that you've told me the story, I can see that.
They obviously reconciled many, many years later and had a good relationship. But when Jerry left the wrestling business, he did a construction company, international TV distribution company. He had the Jared Parsons TV network for a little bit, which was on Roku and different things. So, I mean, he had a big library that he had of wrestling, obviously, and he put that on those channels. But did you talk to him at all? Like, post his wrestling run, when was the last time you talked to Jerry Jarrett?
I actually had a nice conversation with last year's Cauliflower Alley Club.
Wow. What did you guys talk about and how did that go?
We talked about, he put me over and we put each other over and it was nice to see him. And, he just felt at ease. He had accomplished what he wanted to. And he was very successful. And he did a hell of a job. And you got to realize a lot of people ate because of Jerry. He worked hard at his job. You can't fault him for that. He did really well for himself. And a lot of people did well that came out of there. You know what I mean? Everybody from The Rock to McFoley to Austin to Hogan went through there. So I think he did laid his legacy to rest, and God bless Jerry Jarrett.
So he died, of course, this past year, February 14th, to be exact, Valentine's Day, at the age of 80. He was undergoing treatment for esophageal cancer, and he died of a heart attack. So obviously RIP to Mr. Jerry Jarrett, but that was just some sad news, but still had a great life and lived to be 80 years old.
Yep.
I had a couple great interviews with him. He was awesome. He was so nice. He was so cordial. He was so cool and easy to talk to, and kind of could ask him anything. And he, you know, he'd open up on it. He also had a couple books, The Story and Development in NWA TNA, New Concept in Pay-Per-View Programming, which came out in 2004. Then he had another book, which was great, that came out in 2011 called The Best of Times. So he, if you want, you know, more information on him and his background, obviously check out those great books, but you kind of summed it up with his legacy. He's been in the business. His mother was in the business. Eddie Marlin, who's his father-in-law, obviously was in the business. His son's in the business. Man, it's just, he's one of those guys you think about, and an innovator, one of the most prominent wrestling figures of all time, whether it be a promoter, an owner, whatever you want to say, definitely a key figure in wrestling. Who knows where it would have been without Jerry Jarrett?
Exactly.
Right, so let's hit the plugs. You follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com. You can follow Kevin on Instagram at Taskmaster Talks. Kevin, what else do you got going on?
I'm going to be in Nashville this weekend signing autographs at the fairgrounds. So come by and see me. And I'll be seeing you soon, JP, right?
Yes, hell yeah, definitely. Yep. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. We'll be right back next week for some Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. We'll see you next week, folks. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPT Empire to become a patron. And also check out the website, TMPTEmpire.com. And buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother. Please welcome in our new sponsor, Fishing Clash. Download Fishing Clash for free right now on your mobile phone by typing in Fishing Clash in the search bar of your Google Play or App Store. Open the menu in the top right-hand corner, choose the gift code section, and input my special code, Taskmaster, to get an awesome reward for a total value of $20. Enjoy chilling atmosphere after a hard working day. Get familiar with different types of fish species and their habits. You can choose one or two, or you know what you like the most. Explore amazing fishing spots worldwide from Florida to Kamchatka. Whether you prefer fly fishing, ice fishing, trolling, you'll admire the look of all the fishing spots available in this game. This game will help you remember how you went fishing with your dad when you were a kid. So download Fishing Clash today for free on your mobile phone by typing in Fishing Clash in the search bar of the Google Play or App Store. Open the menu in the top right-hand corner, choose gift code section, and input the special code TASKMASTER to get a total value of $20. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the Fishing Clash, as it is a great casual time killer. If you've experienced a loss of motivation, energy, or sex drive, or if you're noticing that you're a little softer around the middle than you used to be, it could be your testosterone levels have dropped. By the time men reach the age of 30, in most cases, their T levels have started to decline, and low T can lead to a loss of muscle mass, depression, lack of energy, and a low sex drive. The good news is now you have your remedy with Test X9. This stuff is the real deal, guys. This formula has 9 clinically proven ingredients to naturally boost your body's own testosterone production. Experience increases in strength, energy, and sex drive, as well as improved mood and well-being. Feedback has been awesome. Guys in their 30s and 40s have reported waking up with the quote-unquote morning wood for the first time since they were teenagers. If you want to take it to the next level, you can maximize your results with the ultimate test stack, which combines the Test X9 with the T-Assist, an estrogen control and liver support blend, and Recovery PM, an amazing sleep aid that has had incredible feedback for helping people to get the best sleep they've ever had without feeling groggy that next day. You'll be amazed with the effect of raising your T levels and improving your sleep will have on your overall performance and well-being. Don't settle for average. Man up at LegacySupps.com. That is LegacySupps.com. And use the promo code Sullivan for an additional 10% off your entire order. That's LegacySupps.com. And use that promo code Sullivan for 10% off your entire order for the best health and workout supplements out there. This is Pro Wrestler approved. The madness has officially begun, and it's time for you to shoot your shot and score big on the nonstop action with MyBookie. It doesn't matter whether you're filling out multiple brackets, betting the national championship winner, or simply looking for player and game props. MyBookie has you covered. Sign up today at MyBookie and use the promo code TASKMASTER to secure a first deposit bonus up to $1,000. It's simple, folks. Put in $200 and play with $300. Just use the promo code TASKMASTER and claim your bonus. College ball, NBA, and UFC, no matter the sport, no matter the minute, MyBookie puts the action in your hand with in-game live betting. And with the choice from thousands of lines and odds, you can turn any game day into payday. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. Just don't forget to use that promo code TASKMASTER. Remember, you can bet anything, you can bet anytime, you can bet anywhere with MyBookie. Three, two, one. Happy New Year from our friends over at Manscaped. The ball has officially dropped, but that doesn't mean you have to drop the ball on your balls in 2023. Whether you had a New Year's kiss or not, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming have you covered for your much-needed resolution of bringing sexy back. So join the 7 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with our exclusive offer. Go to manscaped.com and use the promo code Sullivan20 for 20% off plus free shipping. Let us have a toast for a new year, new you, and a new you with no pubes. To complete the set, Manscaped threw in the Shed travel bag and anti-chafing boxers as free gifts to give to you to keep all your goodies stored nice and comfortably to go along with the Performance Package 4.0. Inside that Performance Package 4.0, you'll find the signature Lawnmower 4.0. The advanced skin-safe technology reduces cuts and nicks on your delicate parts. It also comes equipped with a 4000K LED spotlight that will shine a light to the promised land 2023 looks to be. Cheers to new balls in 2023. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code Sullivan20 20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use that promo code Sullivan20. Time to feel sexy and free this 2023 with Manscaped.